Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jules Gill, only a week ago, I was introduced to the world of Sonic Frontiers. Now, that was one of the highlights of my life, but we're back doing the UBP, and maybe it's just as good.
Do you know what, mate? It was weird. It was obviously like seeing you in person, seeing you so happy because of Sonic Frontiers, and then seeing you still just as happy to talk about Sonic Frontiers via webcam. It's just like that energy has not dissipated one bit.
No. Speaking of being happy as well, we have a very quick mug update. We have you declared last week, look, if I don't have my mugs by the 30th of
I was going to Thanos it. I was going to do it myself.
I'm going to go crazy. And so we got a point of sending the designs over to the person that's producing them. And I think you know a little bit more than me, or you know a little something,
So, you know what we had at our amazing chat where you said, like, the mugs are on their way and then they're not. And I made fun of you saying it's a non-story. This is another non-story part two, Electric Boogaloo, because basically the designs have been sent over. Adam Cleary has tried to upload them to the site. They have been stuck to uploading, and the listing has not gone live. There is something about this mug that the people over at Spring
the people Teespring, want where, their mugs. Wherever
they do not want to sell these mugs. These are the mugs that they don't want you to have, people. So make sure that when they come online that you buy them, so that you can
Doctors
be part
Hayes,
of this counterculture, just anti-consumerism movement.
We've been trying to do it. I mean, it's like all we wanted was just our little squiggly face from the UBP artwork on a mug.
And I feel
it's been like a year of trying to get stuff on. But yeah, that was the word I got as well, was that they are submitted. They just will not, for whatever reason, be listed.
So fingers crossed. By the time that this comes out, obviously it's going to be later today, they won't be live, likely. But next week, hopefully they will be. Hopefully to begin your October, there will be the spookening fright of these mugs appearing in storefronts around the world.
We will try. I know Adam Cleary, he's on holiday from today until next week, but I think he's back. As soon as he's back, I'm just going to look at him straight in the nose and just be like, what have you done with the mugs? And hopefully we can get them sorted for next Friday. But yes, overall, this is the Entitled Banter podcast, the way we take all your questions, thoughts, whatever, the UBP. I got that in the wrong order, but it doesn't matter because it's Entitled Banter. I'm also Scott Tilford, and you're Jules Gill.
I am indeed.
What else do you need? Well, I'll tell you, it's questions, inquiries, and talking points from the masses. Now, we have an opening question from none other than Dropsy, whose game just launched this week. Now, we're not sponsored by Dropsy whatsoever, but Dropsy's game is like a point-and-click adventure thing.
The Dropsy, the giant huggable clown from the video game Dropsy, has a question for us.
Yeah, Dropsy's dropped by. I just got in touch with him on Twitter because I was liking the page, the Dropsy page, because the game's out this week. I think it's been on Steam for a while, but it's finally on Switch. And I was liking that page because I like what Dropsy's all about. It reminds me a lot of Newgrounds or Newsgrounds and Salad Fingers and stuff. Yeah. And so I liked the page. And then it came back and I got a notification. And it was like, Dropsy has followed you. And I was like, I know no context of this game. I don't know if it's going to be terrifying or friendly. But I then thought, well, I might as well just ask him if he's got a question, because we've got the podcast today. So I was like, Dropsy, what's going on, mate? And he was like, he replied and said, which video game character gives the best hugs and the worst and the most damp? So let's do best hoax,
and the
worst.
Damp, and the squidgiest, like okay.
The squidgiest hoax. Because I retweeted that and I said, "Oh, this has made my week." And then Dropsy said he gives me a nice warm damp hug. So we're doing very well.
The thing is, though, that like if it's a good friend and you're like in the throes of going, like we're at Rise, Scott. It's like the club in Newcastle. It's 1:30 a.m. and we've drunk enough fire buckets to make our piss turn luminous and could be weaponized in Death Stranding. So if you give me a hug at that point, which I know you want to do because we're both happy.
Well, I've done it in the past.
Slipknot's just come on in the upstairs one for the fifth time in the night and we are still as excited. The hug that I give you is going to be like a bit sweaty.
It's going to be
warm, but it's going to be the best hug because in that moment we are one. We are one. The maggots writhing.
Actually, speaking of maggots and Slipknot, it is their new album release day today. Now I've not listened to it yet. But
I've not listened to it either. To be honest, I thought that there was two tracks that I did like on it that they put out for singles, and then one was called Yen, and I was there like, yawn.
Nen for me.
To be fair though, Corey Taylor, if you're listening to this, I know that you obviously keep in check with all of the What Culture stuff. I'm not having a dig at you in the band. I'm just saying that wasn't I've been just off the back of listening to the self-titled release that has Sick and Wait and Bleed and all that stuff. So I literally come off the back of that and then to go from that to that was a bit like, ooh, we are turning down a few gears here. Like,
I will balance it out by saying that I really like those singles, but I'm curious what the rest of the album feels like. Anyway, this is going to be a gaming podcast, so gaming characters the best hugs, the worst hugs, the dampest hugs. Best hug has to be I'm going best hug is the bear from Bear and Breakfast or Kuma from Tekken. But
no,
Kuma's more
break
likely
you back. Break your back.
But yeah, exactly. He'll do that hug thing and he'll break you back. Whereas the bear from Bear and Breakfast, Hank, is a very lovely man.
Yeah, bear. I like that Bear and Breakfast has a ton of like elements where you think that things are just going to go so wrong, but it's just so pleasant throughout. For me, the best hug would be the blob from Boy and His Blob because it's so squishy and huggable. It's like, is it Baymax from the
From the movie? Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember.
That's from Big Hero 6.
Big Hero 6, that's it. Like, the best hugs there was designed to be a huggable sort of support robot. And that's what the blob from Boy and His Blob is like. But it would also be quite wet and sticky as well because the blob is anthropomorphic and takes on the shape of whatever jelly. It's a weird game now that I think about it.
I love Boy and His Blob.
You feed the blob jelly beans. Mm-hmm. And he changes shape depending on that. What about the jelly beans micro structure changes? It's like, oh, I'm going to turn into a rocket now because you fed me some pineapple jelly beans.
He just knows.
How does that make sense?
I think it's almost like the inside of Kirby where it's just a big old black hole and just you never think about it.
That's terrifying now because when you hug that, you think that, oh, I'm close to the abyss, as it were.
I think the worst hugs, my mind goes to the Regenerador from Resident Evil 4.
Because you'd hug and then spike all the way through you. Yeah. And plus that sort of like...
just that weird breathing as you're sort of leaning over him. I don't know what your worst hug is, but dampest. Okay, you go worst.
My worst and dampest. It even outranks the moistness of the Rise 1 a.m. hug and the Boy in His Blob hug. It is a hug from the great mighty poo from Conker's Bad Fur Day. That would literally stink.
You would just fall into it, like sort of like a giant pillow or something. And that would definitely be the most damp as well. I was thinking that if you hugged one of the squid kids, not that I want to go around
or
hugging
Splatoon.
Kids. Yeah, just like hugging the Splatoon people. I feel like they're part squid anyway.
It's okay. It's like, if you were also part of that universe, you too would be a squid and a kid now. So
it's true. It's very true. I'd be into the best music. I'm a big fan of the old squid punk.
They've got the new one now, haven't they? They've got the furry mammals are back in the new game, aren't they?
Yeah, you've got to eradicate them in the story. Just touching them kills you. So I guess that would be a bad way to go.
Weird game. Like, there's a lot going on with the Splatoon stuff behind the scenes that's just like, you just go like, this is odd. This is really
the
odd.
They flesh out the lore, the less like
I want
love
them
because,
to. The less I want them to, because it's.
But I know because they're
disturbing.
All like humans all died, and like Splatoon is like set after, and all like the mollusks and whatever all came to life. And I'm like, that's not as cool. I thought you guys were like a whole other dimension or something.
Plus, the end of Splatoon 2, they had that amazing player fest or splat fest where you determined if it was order or chaos going into the new game Splatoon 3, and chaos won. So you're playing this sort of like dystopian horror game that has like a really cute aesthetic. It's weird, very.
I love Splatoon, but I don't need the Bible of Splatoon. I like just pretending to be the squid kids, not much else.
There's a good selection of hugs there, to be fair.
Yes, speaking of weird games, I'm going to do one Sonic question a week, maybe. Oh, I've got at least one.
Okay, go on then.
From that guy 92929, who says, if you could only play one Sonic game and that was all you had to play, which game would you choose?
I mean,
Go on.
I mean, mine says that I want to play Sonic Mania because I just enjoyed that the most, but I don't think I could play any Sonic game forever. Actually, you know what? I know what I could play. I could play Sonic Spinball because of the fact that it's got just enough Sonic to count as a Sonic game. It's got a banging soundtrack, plus the randomness of pinball or spinball in this game's case means that I would actually have a bit more variety to the mix.
True.
It's the same levels over and over and over again. It's just like...
I was going to say, you can kind of convince yourself that it's not a Sonic game, which you need to try and get out of that bubble. I've become even more ill after playing Sonic Frontiers, and I've been trying to 100% Sonic Generations. I was looking at the list of hidden achievements, and I've been doing all the challenge levels and everything. I'm in such a Sonic mode, and I can't get out of it. I had it at the start of the year. It's back. I don't know what to do about it.
My worry is, though, my friend, is that if you are this deep into the Sonic hole, then what happens if you become bored of it by the time that Sonic Frontiers drops in a few weeks' time? Like, because you can burn out. And I know you, mate.
I know.
You play things a lot, and then you burn out of the entire genres sometimes.
I do a bit. I'm like that bit in Hot Fuzz where he's just like, you don't know how to switch off. Yeah. I can't just take a minute. The thing is, the sickness has gotten so bad that I'm aware that Sonic Frontiers comes out a day before God of War Ragnarok, and I'm more excited for Sonic Frontiers.
Honestly, what a show of faith by Sega to put their biggest thing, like return to form, up against God of War, the game that literally everyone knows about and is talking about and has so much faith. Like, that is sending a game out to die and then some.
It kind of feels like it. Although, I think they're banking on, like, because it's PlayStation exclusive, that, like, everyone else will want something to play, and then think they'll get a Sonic.
So it's like this, like, little kid or whatever in the games emporium walking around just going like, oh, we don't have a PS5. Can't get you little Timmy. Can't get God of War. Oh, I'll tell you what's the next best thing? Oh, Sega's Sonic Frontiers. It's exactly the same game.
Yeah, but in an open world, mate. Oh, you can run faster and all that. Next question from Andrew Lord, who says, thanks for the podcast. Well, thank you very much for listening. Why do you think games companies insist on announcing games so early with just logos and cinematic trailers? It just means the game that you build in your head is often just better than what you end up getting. Why not just announce it when it's nearly ready? Shareholders and people to invest.
Marketing 101, isn't it? You've just got to get hype train going as quickly as possible. Most people usually use these teasers and trailers as basically, like you say, Scott, to appease shareholders. They usually do it around sort of quarterly budget time so that you can just pump up the numbers, increase your stock share price, or just make sure that people who have already invested lots of money in your company can see ahead of what the roadmap is going to be so they don't want to pull their money out and move on to other things. When it comes to the consumer, it usually comes alongside a subtle pre-order or a pre-registering of interest, or having some website appear that have a countdown that you have to give your data to. There is always a whenever there is a splash logo or a tiny teaser coming out, there is always the insidious hand of marketing ready to grasp your details, your bank card, or anything else. So, long story short, grime. Just pure grime, mate. Just pure grime.
It reminds me of the reality of the various shows like E3 or trade shows and stuff. Most of those things are just to keep shareholders informed, or maybe to gain additional investment rather than please the fans. Sometimes those things come together. But everything that Jules just said, that made me think of Beyond Good and Evil 2, when Ubisoft was staving off a hostile takeover from Vivendi, and they just announced Beyond Good and Evil 2 to be like, oh, we've got stuff in the works, you can't take us over. And then it's been, what, 5 years, 6 years? We saw a tech demo and nothing else?
Yeah, we saw the amazingly amazing trailer, animated trailer. We saw the pretty ropey-looking gameplay slice that they put out, and then nothing else since.
No.
All of that poor man's tears were for nothing at the moment.
I'm pretty sure I forget who the project lead was. It might have been Michel Ancel, but they're not on board anymore. I think all we have
is actually heartbreaking, because the fact that they waited so long, that they lost the one person who was basically keeping that entire thing alive.
Yeah, but I think overall, the brass tacks reality is that it tends to be investment shareholder stuff. I think if they can just, there's all that mindshare wing of marketing or advertising where it's like, if you can get people talking about your game, then eventually you'll be able to capitalize on it, but there's always a peak and a trough and a drop off, and if you don't nail that date, then sometimes things go on too long and you stop caring.
Yeah,
but they try and get that right.
It's like a sort of wave shape, isn't it? You're just kind of like trying to catch that sort of crest of hype and then just trying to eke it out for as long as possible before interest dies off, like you say. But so many games go through the tumultuous wave shape because they're not the only game. It's not a game released in isolation. There's a million other things that are coming out, and a million other like ident splashes, trailers, and gameplay slices coming out. So it's almost worthless outside of a shareholder perspective, because the consumer, the general consumer like me and you, will forget about a game if it's not within a 6 to 8 month window of release.
Where Metroid is right now, where we know Metroid Prime 4 is coming, it's been restarted, whatever, and the rumors are that Nintendo have a Metroid trilogy ready to put on the Switch, an HD remake or whatever of the originals, and they're just waiting. They're going to kind of almost reset the entire marketing spin and then try and capitalize on what will assumedly become another wave of hype or whatever. But yeah, overall, unless you're someone like a Rockstar or a Bethesda and you can afford to hold all your cards close to your chest until launch when something's ready, it tends to be more money-focused and they need to get more money in to make sure you can actually get through development or whatever it is, and then tie that in with marketing.
It's interesting that you should mention Rockstar, actually, because obviously considering the recent GTA 6 leak, do you know what, though? That's actually put so much interest back into the game, because people have now seen, even though they shouldn't have done, what the game has got to offer in terms of potential and what graphics set that it's running with. And you know what? That's got people speaking about the game more positively than have been in the last year, because of the fact, if you remember all the behind the scenes issues, people pulling out, like directors leaving the Rockstar and wanting to do other things, like the game was aimless and had to be restarted from the ground up. But this has actually got people thinking of it in a positive light, which is interesting that a leak has done more positive press for the game than any of that marketing buzz has done for it so far.
Well, that was my thing, because obviously a lot of the comments that got retweeted and things that got shared around was people like just, you know, crapping all over it and just saying like, oh my God, I can't believe it looks like this. And it's like, it's a 2019 build, you know, you're years away from launch. But I always thought that those people were in the minority. Overall, I thought people sort of looked at it and understood that it was in progress and went, well, that's potentially interesting. There's robbery mechanics and everything else. Yeah. There's things to build on from here.
And there's that the fact that you said, which is people are talking about the game. Yeah. It is like still trending on certain aspects of Twitter. People are still talking about it in terms of like how game dev cycles need to be more transparent, or like other like devs are jumping on board to share their work and progress stuff in signs of support. It's like that level of conversation is worth more than hundreds of thousands of pounds spent on trailers,
because honestly,
you're talking about GTA 6 in a natural, organic way that is not markets. We're not using buzzwords. We're just talking about it, and it's therefore in the public consciousness. And that's like every marketing like person's like wet dream. They're basically just like, yes, thank God, I don't have to do anything. You're talking about the game already.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, the thing is, like, I was going to do a piece to Cam about this. I was going to do, like, a solo ranty thing about this. Because I was like, video game advertising, video game marketing, and the roll-up to launch is so broken. Because, like, we don't, like, they should be showing off this stuff way more often. Like you said, after the Rockstar stuff leaked, loads of devs went, well, this is what our game looked like, you know, 2 years before launch or whatever. And you saw everything from Control to God of War and whatever. And God of War was on fire until, like, 2 months before launch.
It looked awful,
launch.
Didn't it?
Like, but for me, like, gaming marketing, video game marketing should embrace that stuff and be like, look at what we've got so far. We're aiming for this. Look at what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Get everybody excited about that and go, like, you know, this is what we're aiming for. And you get around all the downgrade stuff that way, because it's like, well, we'll hopefully make it look like this, but we had to trade some of the graphics off to make this physics engine work or whatever. But you get people on board with that, and you do a step-by-step thing or whatever. Not every step of the way, but, like, there's something there that I think people will respond to if you care about the craft of a game, and then you capitalize on it, you maximize it at launch by saying, like, this is the best we can do and we'll patch some of it later or whatever.
Yeah, 100% rather than agree.
The cloak and dagger, smoke and mirrors stuff, where it's just, here's a version, here's a CG trailer, here's a vertical slice that they're never going to hit ever. You know, I would rather have it that it was in progress.
A good example was how EA managed to capitalize a lot of goodwill with the recent Skate 4,
totally.
Which obviously is now just called Skate. They were like, the game isn't ready, but here's what it looks like now. And people in the comments were just constantly like, I'm so glad that people are showing us this behind the scenes stuff, because it shows that they care about the product, that they're willing to take time and keep us informed about what product they're trying to make. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that did fall off a cliff when they announced that it was just going to be called Skate, and it was going to be a free-to-play open world game, and it's just going to have bucket loads of microtransactions in.
I'm still curious what that is, but yeah, like, the initial thing was like, oh, okay, God, we're still EA, we still need to go down here. It's
ironic,
like the Dead Space...
No, you carry on, mate.
The Dead Space remake on the Xbox listing for it says that it has in-app purchases. Yeah. So we're all just waiting to see what the hell that thing's
going to
be.
Yeah, because it's like, quickly going back to the Skate 4 thing, it's like, it's funny how all of the goodwill that was generated was from the developers basically making a video diary saying, this is the passion project from our perspective. And the moment that Skate lost that was when Skate became a game and EA basically put their publishing clause on it and said, like, let's talk about the actual stuff now. Like, people are talking about Skate. Let's tell them all again.
Where's the money? Yeah, how do we mine this love and get the money out? I think overall, I think a lot more can be done with making of games. Like, there are so few. I know I've talked about this a few times on different podcasts, news videos and stuff, but I just feel like that's the solution to this. And the response to GTA 6 from the industry is just, that's how you do video game marketing. You don't try and mimic films. You let people know that these things are in progress the same way as an on-set location picture that was taken by the paparazzi or something. You wouldn't take that as a final product, so yeah.
I think that publishers are really scared to show people behind the doors of what they're working on, because they just are so panicky about their ideas being stolen, copied, borrowed, and then done by the time that they actually get out. Because let's say you show off this incredible new mechanic and it's brand new then, but by the time that the game comes out, because of delays and issues, somebody else has already copied it.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
But what it takes is an outsider, like how Indie Game the Movie was people making a film about indie games. Mm. It takes that outside force to look into the industry to bring more light to it. And I wish that we had sort of more, like, imagine like a Louis Theroux style figure that was able to do for what crazy and sort of like niche aspects of humanity do that, but for gaming, like to go in there, somebody to be an investigative journalist who documents their work in film or episodic formats. So
like,
we get that connection.
Yeah, definitely. That's Indie Game the Movie is a really good example of that. I feel like the Double Fine Adventure movie is quite good for that, in terms of going from sketches on a napkin, sketches in a literal sketchbook, all the way through to the finished thing. Danny O'Dwyer's stuff over on Noclip is quite close to that, but not super granular. Like you're saying, you don't have like an actual individual meeting up with every department and walking through every step of it. But yeah, I just think if you really love video games and you're hungry for the medium and how things are put together, then there's so much more to tell you, so that you understand how it all comes together in a really fun, informative way that would only make you love the final product even more. Mm-hmm. So maybe something will get done in that regard now that we've had the Rockstar stuff. But we'll have to keep an eye on it. Next question from a gaming dad, who says, why does Street Fighter EX Plus Alpha get no love? I remember playing it in the arcade, and as soon as it was announced for a console release, it was straight on my Christmas list and I had a blast. My theory is people couldn't handle the change in art style, but I'm interested in your take. Now, I know you're a Street Fighter man, so I thought you might know.
Now, is this the one where they made the jump to 3D? Because I need to double check this one, because I know that when they made the jump to 3D, that was a very unpopular decision and it went pretty swiftly.
Oh,
back
it is.
From
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is the 3D one.
Yeah, because I was thinking, like, this name sticks in my craw for some reason. I can't exactly remember why. Now, don't get me wrong, it's still made by Capcom. It's still more than a competent fighting game. But the problem is that because you're adding in a brand new element of 3D space, it made the graphics look so much worse. When you had like that amazing hand-drawn art style that was just, sorry, the pixelated thing that just looked so detailed on its own 2D format, taking it to 3D, you lost a lot of that detail. You lost a lot of it. Like, that was so blocky in certain areas. And to be honest, it added in a whole new issue with hitboxes, from where does a hitbox connect from a 3D perspective. And admittedly, I don't think that Capcom hit the nail on the head all the way across the board with that one. A limited character roster as well, including in new characters who weren't exactly fan favorites going forward. I'd say that it's still a very competent fighter, but it is not my personal favorite,
like,
mate.
Street Fighter 3 was my first one. Like, I played Street Fighter 2 in the arcades. I had Street Fighter 3 on the PS1. Yep. I don't know which permeation of it was. It wasn't the 3D one.
Alpha 3, was that the one? Because I think
possibly,
that's like,
yeah, possibly Alpha 3.
Which was a phenomenal game, by the way.
Yes, like, I love that game's art style. And obviously Street Fighter 4 onwards, we've had sort of like, almost like a mix of the two, like you were saying before, of almost like a hand-drawn, like it makes you think of hand-drawn imagery, even though it's pixel art. And I feel like, obviously the newest Street Fighter is absolutely gorgeous.
It's
like,
so
we had a
good
playing
looking.
It last week. And so, like, yeah, I feel like they've kind of found a nice like line down the middle. And so, like, that whole approach that I guess X plus Alpha must have done is kind of almost like a Virtua Fighter, where you strip away all the inkiness, the hand-drawnness, and it's more just blocky PS1 style or late 90s style graphics, which just didn't land with most people.
It was flash and fun. It was without flash, but had the fundamentals down to build on going forward. Because I mean, when Street Fighter 4 came out, and obviously it was rocking that sort of 3D perspective, my lord, did that game still looks great to this day. I still maintain.
It's I think, and plus, you carry that all that general intention through a Street Fighter 6. For me, they're on the top of their game right now. Like, I think all that stuff has fed in quite
nicely.
Wait
for that game to come out.
I know. I thought it was this year. It's next, but
I know.
But still, it still looks solid. Next question from Jacob Wright, who says UBP Muggate. Well, we'll see. We'll see if we still got Muggate next week. Hope we're doing well. Same to you. Has there been a game console that you wish you had the chance to play when you were younger? Mine lately has been the GameCube. Oh, go on.
Well, I didn't have access to Sega Mega Drive or Genesis to those across the pond. No, I was always a SNES guy.
Boy.
Then I moved into the PlayStation 1 after that.
Cool.
And I just kind of wished that I'd had a Mega Drive to play on at some point. It kind of like passed me by.
We almost switched places, because I was going to say the Super Nintendo, because I didn't get to play any SNES games until way later, because I was a Sega kid. So I was the one going like, oh, Mario's for kids. Oh, I've got Comic Zone. And then like being
Comic
that
Zone,
guy.
What a legend, man.
And, being a huge Sonic fan, obviously. And so I never got around to it for ages. So we could almost switch. Like, my childhood memories are all associated with Altered Beast and Sonic and Sega stuff and Comic Zone. Whereas I have to imagine that playing Super Mario World when you're a kid would have been life-changing.
It was absolutely crazy. And then backing that up with the likes of The Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past, and then you had obviously Super Metroid when that came out.
Super Metroid.
Like, spoiled for choices on the first party titles, but then you were backed up with a bevy of other games. And the best thing is that there's a pair of lads out there who have a YouTube channel called Console Wars, and what they do is they find the game, a game that was released on both the Genesis or Mega Drive. I'm just going to call it Mega Drive, it's easier for me. And the SNES. And they basically play them in isolation and then come back and have an argument over game was better and show the differences between it. Because in the majority of time, the name of the game was the same, but it was a completely different experience because the hardware was totally different. Like, the sound chips were totally different, so the soundtrack was completely like different between games. In some cases, they weren't just like different levels in the same structure. It was completely different genres almost.
In terms of old consoles, what do you think of that stuff? I got my N64 for my 30th or whatever, and I keep eyeing up a GameCube myself. off. I don't know if I would have enjoyed it at the time because I was such a PlayStation 2 guy, but the GameCube's next on my list. I think that's the one that I'll get next where I can play a bunch of stuff that has just never been re-released or whatever. I don't know if you think that way or if you'll just emulate it instead.
I was lucky in the sense that I got a GameCube in the dying days of the the console. So basically, I got it for super cheap. I had all of the games library to play on. I played all the way through all the first party games. I had like the likes of the Star Wars Rogue Squadron 1, 2, and 3 to play. I played
still need to play them.
They're amazing games. Mm-hmm. And I had such a blast with that. And then once I was done with all of those games that I wanted to play, I was like, cool, right, now I'm going to jump onto like the 360 or the PS3 at this point now. And I just sold the GameCube straight away. I had no emotional attachment to it. I was like, cool, yep, done, bye.
So I was going to say, does it feel like you, is there any console that you feel you've missed in terms of like game history? Because like GameCube's my only one, I think. Like I had all the Game Boys.
I never played a Virtual Boy. I would like to give that try, even though I've heard that it is migraine inducing. In terms of like consoles,
I would like to try that glove thing. What was that glove?
Nintendo Power Glove. Oh, yeah, man. It was awful. It was so bad. The only thing worse than that was they sold an accessory that was basically like a prototype headset. You put it on, and you could, in its own words, you could give voice commands to it. But the problem was is that it didn't recognize it at all. So there was like a airplane game where you could, if you wanted to and didn't want to use the controller, say fire into the microphone and it would fire one shot. So you'd have to go fire, 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 fire again
just
and
fast
again
as possible.
And again. It was awful. So bad.
The idea, the idea of the, because I was thinking all the Stadia stuff that's going on, the Stadia just got shut down. You can check our news video on the channel. Inevitable. I thought Stadia was done last year and then it's died again for whatever reason.
Wasn't even aware that it was still going. I thought that it had come out of the gate, it'd fallen on its ass and I assumed it was dead from that point.
Yeah, well, they sort of like, they announced that it would, they'd be shutting down all future production, whatever it was last year.
What were they producing for it?
Well, I know. And then it was like, well, the service is live. So if you've bought stuff, you can still play it. But then that's what they're shutting down in January next year.
Okay,
but speaking of the Power Glove, when the Stadia was announced, the Power Glove was one of three consoles that they had outside the big reveal event where it was like, they had the Atari, they had the Power Glove, and they had the Dreamcast, which are known as like some of the biggest failures of all time. And now Stadia is just joining it because it was like, oh, what's next, guys? And it's like this thing that has now fallen on its face.
I would actually, just if you saying that, I would like to own a Dreamcast at some point.
Same, because
there's not many games on it in total, but the games that are on it are kind of like well regarded as being some of the best ones. Like, is it Sonic CD? I want to say, is that the one that's on?
CD's on the Mega CD, and then like Sonic Adventure was on the Dreamcast.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of this. I might be thinking of Sonic because I'm thinking of Doshin the Giant. Double D, that's the one that I would...
Doshin's a thing.
Yeah, that's the, because that's the game I want to
play.
The
big yellow
guy. Yeah, I've never played it, and I really want to. And I don't want to bother like downloading an emulator for that thing just to play that one game. I could do, but it's just
like the... There was a racing game, Metropolis Street Racer, I think it was called.
Metropolis? And I don't remember.
I think
that
it's MSR. I think that's what that was. And I played that when I was a kid. I had like a stunt-based scoring system, and I remember thinking that was really, really cool. And it was like back then, before the Dreamcast had its boom-bust thing, the Dreamcast was like the next, you know, the successor or whatever.
I mean, and, it looked amazing at the time. I remember the graphics for that all the games that came out for it. I was like, whoa. Okay.
Well, like that, and I remember when Sonic R. I'm talking about Sonic so much. But I remember when Sonic R got announced and shown.
I hate Sonic
and I was
R.
Like, I never played it, but like when I was a kid, I was like, oh my god, it's Sonic in 3D. And then like I couldn't get a Saturn, so I just had to like watch from afar. But if it was terrible anyway, then maybe I'm all right.
Yeah, skip that one. It's a hard pass for Sonic. Oh, my friend.
Sonic Fighters as well. Just, it's like the games that are just the worst.
Sonic Fighters is at least you can have some laughs at with it, but Sonic it's just god. It feels like you're having your face ground into the floor. You know, like A-Train, he like grabs that guy and drags him along behind him.
Oh,
and the
boys.
It's like that, but on
that
your
is what being
soul.
A Sonic fan is. Just sort of getting every part of you slowly chipped away at.
And then having your body propped up and then patted on the cheek and be like, there. Have a sherbet.
You're fine. You've already died inside. Next question from Darren Martin, who says, hey guys, you guys are smashing the podcast recently as always.
Thank
Hope you're both doing well. Thank you very much. Not gaming related, but wanting to know what courses you guys studied at uni. P.S. Sonic will never be game of the year. What? I mean, have you seen Frontiers? The whole boss fight's leaked.
But that means now, Scott, that you have to put it in contention for your game of the year. like at some point, when we come down to our end of the year videos, it has to be talked about. Like, no matter what, it has to be talked about.
Yeah, I could do a legit, objective reasoning comparison between Elden Ring and Sonic Frontiers. I will
please
do
don't.
That.
Please
as a
don't.
Video.
The internet will kill you. The internet will literally crucify you.
I'll try and take it as seriously as possible. And everyone listening to my voice right now will know that it's a joke, but I'll put it up seriously.
No, mate, trust me. There are a lot of people out there who do not get sarcasm. They do not get intent at all. It's like no. The words that are coming out of your mouth are the literal truth.
Verbatim in text. So yeah, speaking of uni stuff, I went to two universities, both in the northeast of England in Newcastle. And so at Northumbria Uni, I did media and advertising. And then one of the modules there was technoculture. And so I'd always wanted to do, at the time I was trying to be like a music journalist. And I had my own website and I was interviewing bands. I used to just ring them up and be like, can I come to you with a camera and talk to you for a bit? And I used to do all that stuff. And then we did technoculture. And I met my now wife back then too. And she was like, you love games. Why don't you do game stuff? And so when I was at Newcastle Uni, actually the order of that switched around a little bit. I did technoculture. I was like, I'll do game coverage. Went to Newcastle Uni, met my then wife, and switched over to doing media and journalism. And then the journalism wing of it let me do a little bit more music stuff, but then music coverage is just so hard to get off the ground. Yeah. And I pivoted into gaming stuff because my wife was like, you should do game stuff because that's all you ever talk about, for the love of God. And so I did that.
Thing is that I have never met a person who is as passionate about video games as you, man. So if
thank you.
Seeing you go down the route of music, even though I know you love music pretty much just as much, it just would have been weird. Yeah. It would have been so odd. Be like, I think hey, a different reality Scott, where really we're into doing a music podcast. Doesn't sound right. Doesn't sound right. Like,
we could have been doing the entire podcast about the new Slipknot. Like, an alternate reality us is doing a podcast about music, and they're getting a couple of gaming questions, and then they get back onto Slipknot.
Yeah, they're just kind of like, remember, guys, this isn't a gaming podcast. What a weird life that would be. Yeah.
Of what university for you?
I went to Exeter University and I did English Lit there, and nice. Then did my master's in English and film. As you can tell from all of this, it has served my career wonderfully in that I can talk sometimes and I have seen a film. So there we go.
That worked really well in terms of your, like you have a specific trajectory from that uni course into this.
Did
like,
mine I was bollocks, like... mate.
I don't mean in terms of real life. I know you went off and did stuff, but like in terms of like what it's supposed to be pushing you in the direction of, it's sort of like to them it would make sense. Like we set him off and look at him. Oh, he's doing 100%.
There's some like if my tutors or like my course leaders like got wind of what I do now, they probably just be like, oh yeah, definitely. This is why you need to do this because we put him on the right path. He could have gone into something boring like sales or like marketing or like economics. He could have made some money or made something of himself. Yeah, No.
There's more money in the UBP.
Exactly. Mug sales, mate. That's where it is.
Hey, you just wait till those mugs get listed. We're no looking back. Next question from Vernon Punk Bass, who says, UBP, UBP, UBP.
Hey, Vernon.
Hope you and yours are doing well. Question, if you could have voiced one video game character, who would it be, from which game and why? Doesn't mean your voice needs to match who you pick, but just something that you would have enjoyed. Now, I used to worship Solid Snake, so I'm going to go down the Solid Snake
route. You would be perfect as Solid Snake, because it's like, I would love being on the codec call with you. And it's kind of like, it's like, Snake, you've got to sneak into this this research facility. The bombs are about to go off. And you'd be like, well...
are they, though? I mean, you've probably got time. I don't know.
I'm looking up at the top right-hand corner, there's definitely a countdown that says I've got more time than you're telling me.
Give it till the very end.
You would boss that, mate. Can you do, for the people at home, can you do the opening to Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes where he says, like, to the camera, like, missed me or whatever it was? Like,
oh, he looks at the camera and he says, catch you waiting, huh? Oh, but it's like, the way that Kiefer does it, he gets the intonation wrong and he says, like, something else where he says, like, catch you waiting, huh? Or something like that. And it's like, okay, Kiefer, like,
do you want to do another take of that, Kiefer? No, one take. He's like, Calculon. I'll be in my
one
trailer.
One take, Kiefer. That's what they call him.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, but I'd go Solid Snake. How about you?
For me, even though I would love, like, this is the thing. There's an egocentric part of my brain which would want a huge part, because then I think to myself, it'd be everywhere. Like, if I was Kratos, for example, I would be all the talk of the town right now. Mm-hmm. But I think that in terms of quotability and longevity, I would like to have voiced the merchant from Resident Evil 4. Oh. Because then just like that, what are you buying? What are you selling?
He feels like sort of like the average drunk that you just come across in a city, but he's actually got the goods, so he's not just trying to open his coat to you and hope for the best.
All right, mate. All right, how's it going, mate? Let's go.
Do you want to save?
Yeah,
let's see.
You want to save, mate?
Do you want some gear?
I'll write you down in book.
He did this Scouse remake of Resident Evil 4. Give it a long enough timeline, Capcom will get there eventually. So yes, massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions and talking points and stuff. This has been the Untitled Bandit Podcast, the UBP. Hopefully next week we will have mugs for you, an update. Maybe we'll take a photo of them or something when they're real.
I don't know
if I believe that future either, but we'll see how we go. For now, though, I've been Scott Tilford. You've been Jules Gill.
I have indeed, and thanks for having me. And remember that you can always go and swing by our Twitter handles over on Twitter to stay up to date with all of the UBP question call out
shenanigans,
which is going to be next Thursday. I'm at Retro J, but the O is a zero, and Scott is at /LP89. So check those out every Thursday for your chance to get your questions answered on the world's greatest and, let's not forget, most untitled banter podcast.
Hell yes, we'll catch you next week.
Bye everyone.
Goodbye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.